There are only 16 teams remaining. Yes, the World Cup is finally past the group stage. And here in Playa Vista, once again, I am joined by Alex Baker.
Don Donker. The name is Leander Don Donker.
And our soccer editor himself, Joey Galino, the man, the myth, the legend.
Who was asking for that name besides everybody? I'm just curious.
Which name? Joey Galino?
Leander Don Donker.
The name on everybody's lips. Leander Don Donker.
Leander Charlakens Leander is on some people's lips, but Leander Don Donker is the real talking point here.
It's trending right now.
The World Cup has finally, thankfully, moved on past the group stages. That's not to say the group stages were not fun, but if they'd gone on any longer, I think we would have all died of sleep deprivation.
Can you say thankfully one more time for the people in the back? Because I am pretty sure I'm going to pass out during this podcast.
Joey has not slept in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But thankfully, we are done with that stage, and he'll get one day off tomorrow before we move on to the knockout rounds. So today we are going to go through what looks to be we're going to go through all the matchups coming up in the round of 16 and kind of look at both sides of the bracket, because plenty has been made about one side versus the other side. I think a little bit too much to some extent, because you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, Germany is also going to be there. Well, Germany didn't make it past the group stage, which we will also touch on. But I think what we should start with are the first two matchups coming up in the round of 16, which will be on Saturday. Uruguay versus Portugal and France versus Argentina. That's one heck of a way to start out the round of 16, in my opinion.
Okay,
Uruguay versus Portugal, a lot of people will say will be two teams kicking lumps out of each other, which it probably will be, and there will probably be a lot of fights. But when you just look at the quality of what we're getting for that first match to kick it off, I can't think anyone's going to be really upset. And then we move on to France versus Argentina, which, I mean, speaks for itself. Although France is kind of underwhelmed, they've made it through and they got all the results they needed to get. And then Argentina, miraculously in many ways, made it through. Marcus Rojo, anyone have him for the match winner?
What a goal. Oh, man.
The funniest thing about that goal, and I'm going to pass over to you guys in a second, but the funniest thing about that goal is actually before he came in to score the goal, he tried to play a ball, completely whiffs it, and then it ends up, I believe, at Messi, gets recycled. But Rojo's like, no, I'm just going to stay up after that wonderful touch I had. And then he goes, ball comes across, and then he finishes it with a perfect contact.
Yeah, I was going to say, just real quick, like, that's the ultimate, like, coach's, like, training room goal. It's like, what the hell are you doing up there? Oh, nice finish. You know, like, there are so many things to break down about that was wrong, but he finished it, so you got to give it to him.
Yeah. Well, I will pass it on to Alex Baker first and foremost, since we already just heard Joey's voice. Uruguay versus Portugal. Alex, you've watched every single match of this World Cup. Mm-hmm. What are you expecting from that match, and really, why should we be excited about this one to start off the round of 16? Should we be excited?
Yeah, I think we should be. I mean, like you indicated, it might not be the prettiest game of soccer that we ever watch. But I'm kind of curious to see how Portugal... they've played a good team. They've played Spain. But there's something kind of quietly menacing about Uruguay. And the reason I say that is because, sort of like France, they've not been good, but they've done enough to beat all the teams that they've played so far without really having to extend themselves or stretch themselves very much.
Right.
So I'm curious now that they're going to get up against a bigger team, a better team. That's going to force them to play a little bit more, and I think that's interesting. And if I were Portugal, I'd be pretty wary. I mean, I know they've had sort of a more spectacular World Cup with Ronaldo lighting it up, which we haven't really seen Suarez or Cavani quite light it up to that degree. But
although that was one heck of a free kick from Suarez.
That was a gorgeous free kick, for sure. But he had a terrible opening game.
He did.
He's kind of just, like I said, this whole Uruguay team has sort of been doing just what it needs to do to get the results. You've got that defensive pairing of Jimenez and Godin in the middle.
Yep.
And I think that Portugal, I think, are really going to have their hands full to try to get past Uruguay. You're going to need another big day from Ronaldo, because I think that they're a one-off day by Ronaldo from being out of the World Cup. And it could come this weekend. It could come, you know,
July 15th.
I mean, yeah, you know what I mean? You just don't know. As long as he's good, they're going to keep probably having a chance. But if he's not, then I think they could be in trouble against Uruguay.
Yeah, like I agree with everything you just said. But I also think that, like, you know, I'll just throw this out there. I'm pessimistic as hell about this match. I think it's going to be 0-0 after 120 minutes and go to, like, PKs, which in and of itself will be dramatic. But, you know, in terms of what the matchups are, like, what's appealing about this, what you said, the defensive pairing of Uruguay and just their back four in general is really good. Like, you know, when they go out of the World Cup, they don't go out because they give up like six goals or something like that. They go out because, you know, they're just beaten slightly by a better team.
Or Luis Suarez gets kicked or thrown out of a
Suarez
game somehow.
Gets thrown out, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, 8 years old, but you're it okay, holds water.
Well, I mean, 8 years old.
8 years was the handball. 4 years was the bike.
4 years was the bike.
Who knows what could happen this weekend?
Who knows what? Yeah,
headbutt.
That's a great free advertising right there. Watch what to see what Suarez is going to do. No, but yeah, like, you know, Ronaldo is so good, and I know this is like such a cheap narrative, but we know how good Ronaldo is. We know how good, like, what his abilities are. We know that, you know, what he's done at the club level and internationally. It really is a difference maker. Like, you know, him going against that Uruguay defensive line, I think, is going to be really fascinating because they're good, like I said, in the back. And Ronaldo, obviously, in some circles, some people would say he's the greatest player of all time. I would say he's second. But even then, that's no great crime right there. Like, it's a fascinating matchup. I'm worried that if Ronaldo doesn't do anything, I think Cavani is off the pace, and him and Suarez have never been a perfect pairing up top.
Well, Cavani and no one have been a perfect pairing up top.
Fair. Very
good
fair.
Good point.
And, you know, so I that's why I was pessimistic, like I said, in the open. I'm worried that it's going to be 0-0 after 120 minutes. But I do think that matchup of Ronaldo versus the Uruguay backline is pretty fascinating because I feel like those are the two things that are the strongest elements of each side. And if one of them breaks, then obviously it tilts it the other way in favor of, you know, the team that scores or doesn't score. And so I think that right there is reason to watch beyond Suarez biting somebody potentially. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I'm pessimistic about the match, but I'm also optimistic. Is that weird? It's pretty counterintuitive.
Direct contradiction.
Yeah. But yeah.
I guess my question to you guys is, coming into the tournament, we were all, or I was a little bit thinking that Portugal's back line was a little suspect. And I wasn't entirely convinced by their defensive fortitude. They've been better than expected, I would say. But I think this is going to be their first real test. Because even the Spain match, I mean, they gave up three goals. And granted, Spain, you know, played a heck of... I mean, they scored some pretty, fabulous goals.
Costa was pretty good.
Yeah, they played some... I mean, they scored some fabulous goals. That said, do you think that Portugal's defense is better than we thought it was? Is it going to be able to withstand? Because it's not, Pepe is not the same player he was at the Euros.
I think Portugal are better in general than people give them credit for. Case in point, they came into this World Cup as the European champions, and they are not among the favorites. You know, you kind of say, okay, well, it's Ronaldo. Ronaldo sort of LeBrons this team into sort of these good positions to win things. But yet, you can't do that. I mean, we've seen it with Argentina, that one great player cannot do it alone. So I do think that the Portugal defense is not as bad as we thought it was going to be. And then you got other people like Quaresma chipping in with
Quaresma,
game-changing.
What a goal.
Goals.
What a goal.
Is anyone else as shocked as I am that Ricardo Quaresma is so relevant in 2018?
I mean, all of us. Yeah. What is he, 34? Like, good Lord.
It's crazy. It's just... I, in my wildest dreams, did not imagine that Quaresma would have the Champions League he had this year or the World Cup he's having so far. It's like, it's 2018. This guy, like, it's mind-boggling.
I mean, but, on paper, this should be far from the greatest Portugal team that we have seen. And yet, they could become the most – they already are the most successful.
I think that you hit on something key there. Like, they're really good – and you guys know this – like, how you play without the ball is almost as important as how you play with the ball. And it's not that Portugal does anything special when they don't have the ball. Yes, okay, if you want to boil it down, Ronaldo's brilliance is what technically carries them because he scores the goals. But when they don't have the ball and the shape that they keep and the way they defend, you know, it's really underrated. Like, and that's why you're right, Alex. Like, Portugal has a chance to do something because let's not forget, you know, Portugal, excuse me, Ronaldo was subbed off during, what, the 25th minute of the Euro 2016 final? Yeah. And this is not to take away from Ronaldo in any way, but they won it without him. And granted, it was a fantastic wonder strike. They won it for Portugal. But, you know, they played really well without the ball. Like, they're really good at keeping, you know, their shape and keeping possession, frankly, sometimes, and pinging the ball back and forth, looking for, like, seams in the defense. And that's not nothing, you know? And I think that they don't get enough credit for that because the easy narrative is, oh, Ronaldo's amazing. But, you know, that's not all of it, technically, you know?
The winner of this matchup will play the winner of France versus Argentina, which means if Portugal does win, there's a possibility we get a Ronaldo versus Messi, Portugal versus Argentina quarterfinal.
That would be pretty scintillating.
I think people may be interested in that
one.
Yes. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. France, Argentina. What should we look for in this matchup? And is it France that we expect to go through? Is it Argentina? Is this a dead toss-up? I mean, Argentina got in by the skin of their teeth. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, Argentina barely got there. And let's face it, France have not been pulling up trees at this World Cup by any means. But the reason I kind of give France the edge in this is that I think everyone watches this France team and you sort of think, okay, they've got another gear to go to. They have not really hit it yet. Argentina, I don't know if they have another gear. I don't know if they can really do anything other than sort of seat of the pants, messy sort of coming to the rescue performances, which might be enough on the day, but I don't know, like, let's face it, they barely got past Iceland, Nigeria, and Croatia, and now they're going to go play France, who are, you know, among the top three favorites to win it. So I see France coming out of this one. As to what kind of game it is, I think Argentina might test France, and maybe we'll start to see them play a little bit better and kind of see what we've been hoping to see from them. Argentina could get lucky, but I don't know. They're so unpredictable, Argentina. They're so chaotic in defense that I just think that with the kind of firepower France has, if they can get their act together, I think they should be too much for Argentina.
So one thing I noticed for Argentina in that third match, which Sampaoli's changed his lineup seemingly every game, or has every game.
If he's even in charge at this point.
I mean, whoever's in charge actually finally did.
Sampaoli in imaginary quotes.
Finally did what I kind of had been saying. You know, I think last time we were talking about this, I said Mascherano is your, like, playmaking midfielder made no sense to me at all, especially when you have Benega sitting on the bench. And they finally use Benega, and lo and behold, look who ends up setting, you know, putting the pass in for Messi to
underrated,
do.
Yeah, by the way, that Messi goal was great, but that pass was amazing.
Well, Messi's touches were incredible, but that pass, it wasn't just that pass, though. It was, you finally saw, and even before the match started, you know, I was tweeting this out. I was like, the way that I see this actually going is, finally, Messi doesn't have to create and score everything. They actually have a guy who has the ability to do this. Now, I've seen plenty of Ever Benega to know that it's not always consistent, but when he's on his day, he can be a game-changing midfielder.
Right.
And it might not last 90 minutes, but he'll create some chances, and he's a good ball-playing midfielder. Now, after watching that match, I don't know how, and I still am, like, really having trouble figuring out how Gonzalo Higuain is on this team. Because it is mind-boggling.
Okay.
Joey, do you think that, first of all, what do you think, like, tactically, do you think that Argentina is in a better spot than they were two matches ago? And do you think that at this point Higuain will be starting, will be coming off the bench? Do you think he'll be playing at all in this match?
Here's why I feel weird. I agree with your point about Ever Benega. Like, I think that he played well and he deserves to be on a team with Messi because I think that he is a good complement to Messi. Alex will tell you this. Like, I have savaged Gonzalo Higuain so much for costing Messi basically, what, two Copas, maybe a World Cup, something like that. I'll say this about him. He does two things that I don't think Argentina really has outside of him. Number one, I'm sorry, and I know this is, like, kind of unquantifiable, his work rate is ridiculous. Like, he was such a pest yesterday. He was on every ball in the back third for Argentina, like to the point where Nigeria was kind of annoyed. They were like, why are you still pressuring us at this point? And it forced them to play a little differently than they thought they might have to out of the back. And number two is he obviously offers he's what, 6'1"? He offers like an aerial threat, which Argentina doesn't really have. When you're chasing a goal like they were yesterday, it helps. It wasn't that they got their goal off of they got it off corner, but they didn't get it off a header. And so, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world. So, to answer your question, yes, I've been a critic of Gonzalo Higuain before, but I really do think the next game he should be in the 11. And it's not even necessarily that he compliments Messi. It's that he offers something different from Messi. And Messi's so damn good, we all know this, that he could just do it by himself if he has to at a given point. Or he has the skill to kind of take over a certain moment, if not an entire match. And
So I'll say one thing, okay? In watching that match, I will give Higuain credit for a lot of times coming back and checking back. And he definitely wasn't entirely awful in that sense. Like, he was playing within the team structure, and I give him credit for that. But when given the chances as your striker, he missed a couple, and it's not just this match. It's not just this match. It's not just the couple of matches before that. It's not just the last time he was with Argentina or the time before that.
Yep.
It's just an ongoing thing. It's like, oh, maybe he'll overcome it this time. At some point, you just got to pull the plug. So that's one part where I sit there and go, I'm not entirely sure, but. To go back and, you know, beat that drum again, they really should have had Icardi in there instead. But they don't. And so we move on and move forward. And I just sit there and go, okay, well, the other option is Aguero, obviously. And I've been a proponent of saying they should be playing Aguero, Higuain, and Messi, all three. And, you know, the one thing I will say, like, I don't know whether it was tactically Sao Paulo or Mascherano being the coach or whoever, but I will say they finally got it to where Messi was playing on the right side,
right,
like he does for Barcelona, which yes. I was calling for last week. They finally had it as that front three, so to speak, with Di Maria as a left winger and you know, Gonzalo Higuain was the one central number nine.
Right.
And it seemed to work a lot better. Messi looked a lot more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And Benega being able to create through the middle helped a lot in doing that.
Yeah.
And thankfully, they weren't like, we need to have Lucas Biglia in here and sit down Benega, because that's what they do in the past. I just don't get it. I do think Argentina's in a better spot.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like Alex thinks they're going to still go through.
No, I think that's what I was going to say real quick. The whole Messi has never been – he's never been like this out-and-out number nine, and you're right. Like, when you play him with other talented attackers, it's better for him. It's better for the formation. It's better for everyone. And frankly, let's be real. Argentina's got a lot of talent, but structure? Not so sure about that. So why not throw a bunch of attackers forward, because Messi, A, feels more comfortable that way, and B, that's how your player pool is better set up for it. So, sorry, Alex, go ahead. I didn't mean to jump in there.
That's all right. Yeah, I'm not convinced by Argentina. I mean, I know they got the result that they needed, but they really came close to not doing it. And, you know, Rojo, like, could have been called for a handball right before he scored the goal. Like, they're still, like,
yeah,
this team lives so dangerously.
But that said,
they're exciting to watch.
That said, I didn't think that it was should have been a penalty on Mascherano.
I'm saying
the Mascherano one. I personally don't think that was a penalty. I think that was pretty soft. And yeah, if you look at the replay, you're like, oh, he had his arms. But like, I didn't think that was enough contact. I didn't think I thought the guy went down really easy. And yeah, I personally just didn't like that. And that's one of those where the little VAR has limitations, and you saw it there.
It could go either way.
I'll just say this. The one excellent team Argentina has met in this World Cup, Croatia, picked them apart, tore them to shreds, chose their moments, and just destroyed.
Even without the Caballero goal, like
the floodgates. But are we going to say Croatia is better than France? Does Croatia have a better midfield? It might be clicking right now.
Okay,
but
hold on. Is that where we're going?
I'm just chiming in on
France.
You know, that to me is an indication of how they're going to do against France.
Okay, let me just throw this out there. I'm done with you guys. Like, they have more talent than pretty much every team at every tournament, But whether it's managerial, whether it's like mutiny from the inside, like they can't get it together. I don't think this team, I think what you guys mentioned earlier is true about teams not hitting their peak yet. Like, I think Brazil, frankly, is still going to win this whole thing. I think there's a couple other teams out there that haven't been great but can still hit another level. I don't think France has another level. I think they're trash, frankly. I think they're going to get eliminated by Argentina in the round of 16. There, I said it.
Joey Gugliano.
Hot takes, baby.
France are
hot
trash.
Takes.
He could say it in French if you wanted
him
to. Well, he just did. Well, either way. So let's say if Portugal makes it and they're playing France, we're getting a rematch of the Euros, which would be pretty awesome. And if it's Argentina that makes it, then it would be Messi versus Ronaldo.
And if Uruguay
wins, then more than likely you're getting Luis Suarez versus Messi if it's Argentina. And if Uruguay makes it and it's Edinson Cavani, Mr. PSG versus France. So
too bad Patrice Evra didn't make this France 11.
France with Atletico's striker versus his own center back.
Can you imagine if Patrice Evra was defending Suarez in the next round?
Straight forward.
And so we've knocked out, you know, two of those matches. So the next day we have Spain, Russia, and Croatia, Denmark. On the other side of the bracket, what most considered the easier side of the bracket, but for the easier side of the bracket, quote unquote, definitely in heavy quotes there, these two teams are in the tougher upper half, you would say. And based on what we saw Uruguay do to Russia, we kind of are all expecting Spain to pretty much smash Russia because Spain's been pretty good, right?
Right.
So,
and Russia's been good against not great competition. Yeah.
Spain, for me, has just been the connection between Isco, Iniesta, and Silva as well. I think you can include in there. And, you know, Busquets a little bit further behind. But really, it's been Iniesta and Isco for me have just been so, so perfect together. And it's been fun to watch. I've always been a huge proponent of Isco, even leaving Real Madrid just to play more. But at this point, you can really see the quality coming out in Spain's midfield more than anywhere else. And De Gea, I know, only has made one save, and he's not necessarily been great, but...
You don't want to count against them.
All in all, Diego Costa has been really good. Everybody on Spain seemingly has played enough of their part. They haven't been perfect by any means, but it's another team where you could see them hitting their stride as the tournament goes on, and I'm not convinced that Russia is going to be the team that knocks them out, but hey, I could be wrong. You guys got any thoughts on whether or not Russia is going to be the team to knock them out?
I don't think so. I mean, look, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with Uruguay. Russia was really good in the opening match, and you kind of see that home soil boost for teams that, you know, host the World Cup. We saw it obviously here in the United States with 94. Only time Germany and France have ever won the World Cup was when it was on their home soil. Like, there's something about
Germany.
It.
England.
Or England, sorry, yeah. England and France, the only time they've won it is on home soil.
The Germans conquer all over the globe.
They do. They became the first team to win the first European team or the first non-South American team to win on South American soil last cycle.
Well, they're not here anymore. So
they're not.
Well, okay, so we'll quickly brush on past to...
I think we all think Spain are going to beat Russia.
Spain's going to win.
I think we agree.
We do. So we'll move on to the other side, which is they would play the winner of Croatia versus Denmark. And Croatia has arguably been the best side in the entire tournament so far. I mean, you know, a lot of talk has been about Belgium being really good, England being really good. Well, we saw who they were playing. Croatia was playing what seemed like some pretty decent teams, and they did not really mess around with any of them. They put them all away pretty easily, and Luka Modric has been, you know, he's in line to win the Golden Ball if he is able to take Croatia further. Obviously, they would probably be facing Spain in the next round if they make it past Denmark. But, Alex Baker, you have, again, to remind everybody, seen every single minute of this damn World Cup. So
even on your off days.
Yeah. Should we expect Denmark to put up a good fight and to possibly knock out Croatia? Or is it just Croatia's looking like they're the team to beat right now?
I don't think you can count Denmark out as easily as you might want to at first glance. It's one thing Denmark has managed to do in this World Cup is to never really look like a very good team, and yet to beat teams that while you're watching them, you're thinking this team is better. I could start with Peru. I could say they're fairly evenly matched with Australia. Mm-hmm. And then they held on with France dominating possession. Granted, that was kind of maybe the worst game I've watched in this World Cup.
And to be fair, yeah, like Denmark did not set up to attack. Like they knew that they were going to.
No, but I'm just saying this Denmark team has sort of a way of like not playing all that well. Then, you know, they've got a great goalkeeper. And then you've got Eriksen, who's just been lights out in this tournament. He's run more than any other player in the group stage. He's got a goal. He's got an assist.
In qualification, too, he was tremendous.
Yeah. Barcelona people, if you're out there and you need a replacement for
whoever you want to replace,
or whoever you want to replace next, you know, there's your guy right there. So while I do think Croatia hopefully wins, because I'd rather see them play what I'm assuming will be Spain in the next round. Yeah. Denmark, they're not a pushover. They're definitely not a pushover.
They're not. And the thing is, like, when you get to this stage of the World Cup, every team that's there is there for a reason. And it sounds cheap to say, but they qualified. They, you know, advanced past the group stage. So when you get to that point, even if you're not the biggest named nation in the world, like, you're still there because you earned it. And so, yes, you know, that in and of itself will make it tough. But, man, like you said, Croatia's midfield is going to boss everybody in this tournament. They're good defensively. Mandzukic has goals. You know, and just frankly, they're looking at that side of the bracket. And, you know, if that doesn't light a fire under your ass, like, I don't know what will. Like, just seeing all those other teams, like, that are down there. When you have, like, Brazil and all the other teams that are on the other side, like, I think they're in a good spot both motivationally and with who they're playing. Yes, a Spain, a prospective Spain matchup in the round of 16, in the quarterfinals will be tough. But I like where Croatia's at. I don't think they're going to waste this opportunity. Denmark is not going to be a pushover, but I kind of expect them to advance rather easily.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Brozovic has covered really well, and then Rakitic and Modric have just been incredible. And then, yeah, just I mean, Croatia's midfield has been awesome. It's been amazing to watch just how dominant they've been, and then they're such a solid team. It's really what it comes down to.
They're a really good team.
They're tough to say. It's tough to say that this team is not good enough to advance. And honestly, like right now, if I was in the UK and I could get to a nearest bookie, I would put some money on them making the final, and I would put some money on a golden ball for Modric, in which case you're probably having a talk about him winning the Ballon d'Or at the end of the year.
Yep. And just real quick, you know, Belgium is kind of the hot pick, is the team that's going to win the World Cup next that's never won it before. We've seen that a couple times in our lifetimes with France in 98, Spain in 2010. Croatia, low-key, that team. Like, them winning the World Cup this summer, I don't want to put that on necessarily, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Oh, not at all. And speaking of Belgium, it is actually the next couple of games that we're about to get to. So Belgium versus Japan. Joey, you were just saying how every team that's arrived here has earned their respect to be here. What do you think about Japan?
That's a loaded question. No, okay, look. Japan got fortunate with the Sanchez yellow card, red card against Colombia. Yes, that much is true. But they also played really well against Senegal, I feel like. And they did what they had to do today against Poland, who, granted, was already eliminated. And that last 20 minutes was just ugly. Like, that was the Simpsons joke writ large about pass, pass, pass. They're just pinging the ball back and forth. But, you know, they sacked the manager in what, March, the previous manager? And the new manager, he's gotten a connection with the team that's kind of they have more confidence. They're playing with more energy and fun. Like, I think his setups have been better. His 11s have been better. And because of that, I guess they've got a puncher's chance against Belgium. But, man, Belgium has looked really good. Like, they didn't even try today against, granted, an England side that was undermanned. But they had, what, four or five starters still in the lineup? Yeah. Belgium had, what, one, maybe two? And they still took it to them and won that match. So
yeah, I mean, the talent's not really been an issue when it comes to Belgium. They have it on the pitch. You know, the old adage is you have to beat what's in front of you. And frankly, Tunisia and Panama were what was in front of them. And they did beat them pretty solidly. But when we saw England, you know, put up six, then you're going, this competition is maybe inflating the value of these two teams a little bit more than it should be. And, you know, Tunisia and Panama are pretty much even when they played each other. So you kind of went, okay, yeah, it reinforces the fact that neither of these two teams are really all that good. So I don't know in Belgium or England have really been tested by anybody. And, you know, from the sounds of it, I don't know if Belgium's going to really get tested by Japan. But I think they'll get tested more than they did in the group stages. I mean, in terms of their first team, you know, England, that was just kind of a weird game. And we all knew it was going to be like a nothing game in many ways in terms of what we can take away from it. Do you think that Belgium is one of the favorites? I mean, they're you know, the winner of this plays the winner of Mexico and Brazil. And then conceivably the winner, you know, Argentina or France, Portugal, Uruguay. Like, it's not an easy, it's not an easy path.
By the time they get to the final, it might be like,
whoever makes it through is going to have gone through, you know, every single rung of hell to get to the final.
Well, I'll say this about Belgium, if we're kind of comparing them to England so far, is that Belgium could bring a guy off the bench like Yanezai, who hasn't played a minute in this World Cup, who could go and do that.
Right.
And he's not even like, I don't even know what club the guy plays for at the moment, do you? Like, he's basically like followed David Boyes around.
I think he plays in the Bundesliga, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I just don't
that.
Even
I could
know.
Not,
he,
yeah.
You have to look it up, right? Yeah, he's bounced around. He hasn't had a consistent berth at a club for a few seasons now, but... You know, no one was talking about Yanezai ahead of the World Cup, and he's just one of so many players. Like we were talking about, they're playing basically their reserves,
yep.
which is as good as a starting lineup for yep. a lot of other countries in this World Cup. So.
Actually, I believe the language I used was it's insulting to the United States that they can roll out that reserve lineup.
Yeah.
Whereas R11 is like, it's good, but, you know, we can't sit those guys. Let's put it that way.
It's Real Sociedad, by the way. But yeah,
it is La Liga.
He's bounced around a fair amount. But yeah, I think the depth and the talent, like I said, is they're probably not going to Adnan Yanezai late in the match if they really like they have Mertens, they have Hazard, they have Lukaku.
No, he's like fifth in the
but they have choices. That's
no,
the
no,
thing.
No. They have depth in case of injuries or whatever. They have guys that they can plug in. I mean, even Fellaini. You know, we're talking about a guy who's been at United and been popped up in some pretty big moments. They left. You know, Raja Nainggolan at home.
Yep.
Like that's they have the luck. When it comes to talent, it's not the issue.
Yeah.
It's a matter of how good is this team really going to be, and then defensively they have the talent again, but they haven't really been tested. So in every World Cup, generally speaking, and not just generally, you just imagine there's going to be a time where the team gets tested. And
it won't be this match against Japan. Probably.
Okay. So that's in that case, we should probably move forward. To the other match, which is going to be amazing, and it should be anyway, Mexico versus Brazil. Now, there's a curse on Mexico, as I'm sure everyone is well aware, but I will remind you anyway. Since 1994's World Cup, that's six straight World Cups, they've been knocked out of the round of 16. That is crazy. It's insane. And facing Brazil now is not make it easy. And we were talking earlier about how Brazil's a team that we kind of see getting into stride. Joey, I'm going to start with you. What do you think about this matchup? Brazil, Mexico, who you got?
I'm wondering this. Again, like you said, we're wondering if Brazil has, you know, not hit its stride yet, but is about to start clicking. I personally think that's the case. I want to go to the other side of this. Mexico was really good against Germany, obviously. They were really good for the first, 80 minutes against South Korea? They give up that late goal to Son from Tottenham, and then they were absolute crap yesterday, to call a spade, against Sweden. And, you know, it's almost like – it's almost night and day. Like, I hate the tale of two cities, the tale of two halves, whatever, like, you know, sports allegory, whatever you want to call it, cliche.
Charles Dickens?
Yeah. Well, a tale of two, you know, it was a tale of two halves. You know, people – that's like lazy
– It was the best of times.
It was the best
of
times. It was the worst of times. But that's really kind of how it's been for Mexico. Like, they were awful yesterday. And frankly, they were kind of bad in those last 10, 15 minutes against South Korea.
And it was a must win. I mean, they weren't like
– Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't like a dead rubber. They, like
– They did not qualify after
needed
two games.
They needed a draw.
They needed a draw.
And they went USA on it and ended up losing 3-0. I mean, even worse, you could argue.
That's mean.
I mean, it's the truth.
Cut a guy deep with that. But, no, yeah. But, no, but you're right. Like, that's – so I'm wondering, like – Mexico was really good, and Osorio has gotten the tactics really – Juan Carlos Osorio, the manager, has gotten the tactics really on point so far. And frankly, I think the U.S. should take a long, hard look at him if he really is going to be done with Mexico after this World Cup. And the joke was like, oh, he was, you know, public enemy number one in Mexico before the World Cup. Then he won that first game and did well in the second game. So it's kind of like, how do you respond? We could talk about Neymar ad nauseum. We could talk about Brazil to death. We know they're insanely talented. We know they've got a few injuries here and there, but they're still, like, just deep as hell. Like, we were talking about Belgium's deep. Brazil is deeper than arguably any team in the tournament. But I'm wondering if, like, Mexico is going to even make this a thing, or if it's going to be Brazil by, like, two or three goals. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand what you're saying. I think Mexico was really good in the first couple of games, clearly not up to it in that third match. And I think part of that is underrated Sweden, because, you know, Sweden was...
They're good, that's fair.
Sweden is actually a good team. They were better than Germany.
And Italy,
Germany got bailed out of a no-call and a penalty and a Toni Kroos, like, stunning match winner. Over the course of 90 minutes, you would probably say Sweden was the better side. First half, they were definitely the better side. And that was with the pressure already on Germany, because mm-hmm. they had flubbed their opening match and lost to Mexico. So when you take everything into consideration, I think Sweden gets a little bit handicapped in that. I think Mexico has the ability to do it. I just don't see them doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like Osorio a lot. I think he's honestly like one of the smartest coaches out there. But Mexico's in a weird spot because it's not really a young team. There's definitely some veterans in there, and their expectations were super low entering the World Cup. And now I think they overachieved a little bit early on, and now they're at the spot where it's weird, because even when they were overachieving against Germany, not everyone was playing all that well. You know, Chicharito hasn't really looked that great in this World Cup.
There's a lot of counterattacking in that game for Mexico.
Well, no, there is, and the counters were pretty good, but all in all, like the finishing just wasn't quite up to it, and I just thought that there were too many not 7 or 8 point like plus rating,
right.
rating performances. And outside of Ochoa, who's been pretty good.
He's a great World Cup keeper, man. He's so good.
He's just a good goalkeeper. I think Ochoa is good. I think as a team, they're like very industrious, and they're very well drilled because they're very well coached. But I think when you really look at it, the players that need to perform have not performed
right.
up to where they need to perform. And against Brazil, in a knockout like scenario, you just need that. And I'm not convinced that they're going to do it.
Yeah, and even then, like to your point, you know, me and Alex have actually talked about this just kind of offhand. Like, does a Neuer who doesn't miss the entire season make that save on Chucky Lozano? I frankly think he does.
Does Ter Stegen make it?
Post,
yeah, he does.
That too, that's another issue.
I still don't understand. Like, you know, Joachim Löw, and I know, Alex, you just did like least valuable players and MVPs of the tournament so far, and I'll do a little plug here for you. I know you speak Joachim Löw. Yeah, Joachim Löw kind of made a lot of mistakes. There, you know, Germany was, and not to just go on a tangent, but I will. After watching that first match, what was the best chance Germany had in that match? A late Mario Gomez header that he missed. In the second match, Gomez comes in the second half, and Germany actually looks like a team again. They clearly, it was not working with Werner and the combinations they were trying around with. It just wasn't working there. At some point, you had to change it up and just go with a traditional striker. And then going further back, boy, Leroy Sané would have changed some things up
yep.
there. And
yep.
just injected some
oh,
energy,
God.
Some like
preach.
And like, it's just, there were so many mistakes on a selection basis for Germany, because it wasn't like they couldn't possess the ball. It wasn't like they weren't able to get to the point where they were going to be in the opposition's like finishing third.
It was all Mesut Ozil's fault.
It was no, but it wasn't. Like, it genuinely wasn't. What happened after they took Ozil out of the first match and they didn't play him in the second match? Nothing. Germany looked awful in that first half. They genuinely looked like a terrible, terrible team. And then they have to take out Müller in the third match because he wasn't having a good World Cup either. It was like there were too many nothing performances. Now, again, just going back to Mexico, I'm not convinced that the guys that you kind of expected to have those performances have really turned up. And they've done it. The team as a whole is playing like has played pretty solid. So I think they will be compact, and I think they will give Brazil a challenge. I don't think it'll be necessarily 3 goals unless Neymar shows up. Frankly,
yeah. I do worry about Mexico in this match, because I think a lot of the expectations we placed on them were based on us thinking that they'd open the World Cup by going out and beating a very good Germany team. And what we found out is that they went out and beat a really crap Germany team, basically.
Right. Yeah.
The evidence since then has taken a little bit of the shine off that win for me. Will they get destroyed by Brazil? They definitely could, but like you say, Shahan, they could put up, you know, an organized display. Maybe they could get lucky. Maybe they could edge past them or not get blown out. But I don't know. It could really go belly up for them in this game, to be honest. Without another big game from Ochoa, who leads the World Cup in saves right now,
they need Guardado and Vela to really be clicking. I mean, Vela was amazing in that first match. Everything he touched seemed to turn into a chance.
And him checking Toni Kroos was invaluable.
Yeah. So we'll move on from that. It's that match was on July the 2nd. And then the very next day, we wrap up the round of 16 with a couple matches on what is considered the easiest little quadrant of the bracket, if you will. Sweden, Switzerland, and Colombia, England. Yeah, everyone was saying, you know, if you're England, you want to lose this match against Belgium to get into this easy part of the bracket. Well, the easy part of the bracket comes with the caveat of Colombia versus, instead of playing Japan. I personally would have preferred to play Japan, but and guarantee yourself or close,
quarterfinal shot,
close
yeah.
to guarantee yourself a shot at the quarterfinals, even if you are playing Brazil or Mexico. But England is where, you know, you would want them to be, quote unquote, playing against Colombia. And you know, take away the red card, which kind of ruined that first match for Colombia. Alex, how do you think Colombia has been? Do you think England should be the favorites in this match? Or do you think it's... Who do you pick? How do you see this going, I guess?
No, I don't see England as the favorites.
England see themselves as the favorites. Well, the country does.
They think they're going to bring home the trophy.
It's coming home.
Football's coming home, lads. It's coming home.
You know, the Queen called in sick today to watch the match.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, look, I think Colombia has been pretty good, and I think they've been tested against better teams. You know, the one good team England played was Belgium, and they lost to their reserves. Granted, they maybe were not trying to win it, but England. you know, some of this might hinge on James, because we know that his coach, who I won't name, is worried about him.
Oh, you won't? Why not?
You guys all know his name.
What is it, Alex?
You know his name.
What's his name?
But the audience doesn't know it necessarily. Just say it. You don't have to say it the right with that pronunciation. You just, you know.
Peckerman.
Yeah, that's how you say it. That's not how you said it earlier, but okay.
Peckerman is worried about James. So should Peckerman's worries be for nothing and James be okay? Then I do think Colombia has a lot of quality players, and I think that they could beat England. Will it be comfortable? No, I think it's a pretty actually even match overall. But if I had to pick a favorite, I maybe will say I think of Colombia as a team that could actually go further and get to – they have potential to go further in this World Cup. So I feel like England, if they win this – well, I'm sort of waffling now.
No,
I think it's. But I think you're right to waffle, because I think this is about
it is as a tougher challenge.
It's about of all the matches in the round of 16. This might be the most evenly between. Yeah. I think between this and Uruguay, Portugal are like the two of
Switzerland, Sweden.
Well, we'll get to that. We're not there
will
yet.
We though.
We will. I personally, I mean, I think it is. I think I like Colombia a lot, but then I look at England and I say, you know what, Harry Kane's been really good. Yeah. And they really have performed very well so far. And even against Belgium, in which there were a lot of substitutions, England had some chances. They didn't completely play awful football or anything. They were playing pretty well all in all. And I don't necessarily take them to be a dud. I think it's going to be a very competitive, good match. But I do like Colombia as well, because I think Colombia has some World Cup pedigree. And at this point, I'm not convinced that either of these teams is head and shoulders above the other.
Right.
So I do think that this is going to be one of the more intriguing matches, because either one could go through. I personally do kind of give the slight edge to Colombia, just because I think that, as Joey will always reinforce, South American World Cup qualifying really does make sure that the
it's
right
the
teams get in.
It's the only tough place to qualify.
It makes sure the right teams get in, and I mean, this team, there's a reason they're in the World Cup more than most teams are in the World Cup. They went through the trial of fire to get there. And at this point, you know, to start off a World Cup, to lose a match after getting a red card.
In the third minute, and
not have James Rodriguez even be fit to start in that match. And then to be able to come back and win a couple matches and get your spot, it's, you know, and win the group, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
It says a lot about the character of this team, and the coach is definitely experienced. The players are experienced. There's no real, you know, you look at the squad and you say, okay, these guys, they're built to make a run. And whoever wins this match, a lot of people are picking to go to the semifinals.
Right. Well, yeah, I think there's three things at play here. Yeah. And the first one I want to say is, Sean, you had a point where, you know, you think that Brazil is better equipped, and I agree with this, to deal without Neymar than they might have been 4 years ago. I think the same thing is kind of true about Colombia without James.
Oh, I agree.
And I think that Colombia has been really good so far. Like, again, that red card was a bizarre circumstance. It was warranted, 100%. But it also kind of threw things for a little bit of a tizzy. And, you know, in the matches since then, I mean, they completely outclassed Poland the other day. And today, with their B squad, they beat England's B squad. Who knows what that'll mean going forward. But, you know, that's one thing. I think Colombia is really good. The second thing that's at work here is kind of going back to what you guys were saying about, you know, Mexico's win over Germany, maybe losing a little shine because of what Germany did. And I think that's fair. Like, I think that we do this too often in sports journalism, criticism, whatever you want to call it, where you take away from a team that does something when the team that actually did the other thing on the other side of the equation has looked better than, you know, what you might have thought. Like, and I think a lot of us coming in thought Japan would be one of the worst teams in the World Cup. Well, guess what? They not only beat Colombia in that first game, granted, again, with, you know, a man advantage for about 87 minutes, they looked really good against Senegal, as far as I'm concerned. And then
and Senegal was arguably the best.
Arguably the best team
in that group. Like, Senegal kind of got hosed a lot, like Morocco got hosed.
Yeah, so let's not, you know, take away from Japan and
what
they
did.
They have, that's fair. But they also, you know, like, I know today was kind of just a routine exercise, a training mission, if you will, against Poland because they were already out of the World Cup. But, you know, Colombia shouldn't be dinged too much for losing that match. And so then the third thing that's going on here, the British fatalism is real. And the fact that they think they're always going to lose, something's always going to go against them.
Not this year, man.
Well, no, they believe it. But this year, I actually think it's kind of true because I'll say this. England is really good. I like the energy. I like the width. I like the speed and the dynamism of this team. I really do think, like, maybe at Euro 2020 or, you know, even World Cup 2022, this team will hit its full potential with this particular generation of players. So I do believe in them. I'm not trying to take away from them. That said, man, the 1 year that, like, they do well in the first couple games, which granted were against inferior opposition, and their reward is playing this Colombian side, which we're going to talk about dynamism. That's this Colombian side has it all over the place.
Yeah, it does.
I think it's an unfortunate matchup. I don't think England, I think they have a chance, but I'm not as optimistic. I would go 70-30 Colombia. I would go that high in this match. I really am confident that they're going to do it.
Well, the winner of this match, whoever it is, is going to play Sweden versus Switzerland, or whoever wins Sweden versus Switzerland. And Sweden and Switzerland are two of the more intriguing teams in this tournament because...
Define intriguing.
in the sense that they've both been pretty damn good and flown under the radar for the most part, don't get talked about nearly as much as they probably should for what they've done on the pitch. And both of them could beat England/Colombia and make to the semifinals of the World Cup. They're both good enough to do that from what I've seen of them in this tournament. So just that alone is intriguing to me. Because imagine this, I mean, really, it's crazy to say this, but they would be facing, you know, Spain or Croatia. That would be a semifinal. It'd be crazy.
In the World Cup.
Yeah, in the World Cup. And no one, like, in what we've seen in the group stages, that's not crazy. That's not even out of the realm of possibility. I mean, Sweden was really, really good.
Sweden's been good.
Sweden's been, like, They completely really did outplay Germany. They should have been 2-0 up with Germany completely ready to collapse, and then we wouldn't even be thinking about them collapsing in South Korea in the third match because Sweden would have already knocked them out. And like that's what should have happened because it should have been a red card penalty if we're being honest.
Boateng
would have been gone. And then Switzerland, you know, Shaqiri has been awesome. Xhaka had that incredible goal as well. All in all, like Switzerland is a very solid team. How do you see – who do you think wins between Sweden and Switzerland? Oof.
Man, that is just anybody's guess, really. Yeah. Like actually, I'm kind of with you, Sean. I really like both these teams because, as you say, nobody was talking about them going into the
World Cup. They're both really solid.
They've both been really good. I thought the way Switzerland handled Brazil was impressive. I know it was a little bit physical for some people's liking, but what are they going to do? They're not going to outplay Brazil.
They fouled Neymar 10 times. And they never got in trouble for fouling him because they did it intelligently.
Yeah, they played on the line really well, and they took their chance when they got an equalizer. Then I thought that against Serbia, they were fantastic. Yeah. I've also really liked Sweden, I'll plug a piece I wrote the other day about how the Sweden, you know, there was a lot of sort of should they bring Zlatan, should they not,
and Zlatan.
What's that?
Say from Zlatan.
Well, a lot of it was from Zlatan, sure, but other people too in the media as well. There's a lot of pressure to bring him, and for whatever reason they didn't, and it was a good move.
It was a great move.
Sweden never really did that well at tournaments with Ibrahimovic, and somehow without him, they've sort of discovered this sort of collectivism. I don't know who the star player is, if they even have one. You know, Toivonen's been pretty good.
He's been
Marcus
pretty good.
Marcus Berg's been okay. But
Forsberg hasn't even hit the pace yet. Like, he's been okay, but Forsberg could be way better for them.
Yeah.
But the organization, the way the coach has them playing, like,
they're a really solid team. Well,
maybe
really
I give them a little bit of an edge in this, but this one is like... Yeah, that's like, you know, you're talking 70-30. This is like 60-40.
This is 50-50.
I think that's what it is that I think I would give Sweden the edge, but then you look at the kind of like dynamism of Shaqiri and you say,
See, they have a couple more X-Factor players.
A couple more match winners, I would say.
You could say match winners, but then you also have, you know, like if he doesn't have his day, then you kind of take Sweden. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those where it is a really intriguing, special. I think it's going to be very interesting if England was to make it past Colombia and face, let's say, Sweden, because I think Sweden would be a team that would knock out England.
Yeah. I would give both these teams the edge over England, actually. And maybe even over not Colombia. But.
And this is kind of like a hipster thing for, you know, a soccer podcaster to say. I think Uruguay-Portugal is going to be 120 minutes of boring-ass soccer that's going to go to PKs, frankly. I think France-Argentina is two underwhelming teams. Hopefully Messi can give us something. Brazil's going to boss Mexico off the pitch. Belgium's going to boss Japan off the pitch. Spain's going to boss Russia off the pitch. Croatia, same. And then, I think Colombia is going to beat England. This might actually be the best match of the round of 16.
Whoa.
Yeah,
I'm gonna get some organic IPA.
I got my faux hawk and my skinny jeans just ready and all. We're gonna go shopping in Portland right after this. Distressed denim in my backpack, but for every reason you guys said, like Sweden has played again. How you play without the ball is really critical, and it's not a weakness to be a side that doesn't have a majority of possession, but counters well and links up well going forward, which I think Sweden is. And, you know, again, like I'll go back to it. Like I think Switzerland has a couple more match winners, if you will. We've talked about those kind of players for Real Madrid in our Champions League podcast. I think they got a couple more than Sweden does on a given day. But again, you're right. If they don't score, then all of a sudden, what are they going to do? What's their avenue to victory? Like, there's just so many unknowns in this match that I feel like it's ultimately going to be very entertaining because it's also not a game where, you know, like, let's say Belgium scores early. They can just park the bus and not even, like, try going forward. Like, I'm not saying that'll happen, but that option is there. I don't get that sense with these teams. Neither one of these teams feels like they should be the overwhelming favorite or they have a decided tactical, you know, or personnel advantage. So I think this is going to be the best match of the round of 16.
Yeah, I can see why you say that. Like I said, I think this is one of the, I'll say, three matches that are really, it could go either way and I would not be surprised in the least. And to be honest, I think that both these teams are like the two most underrated teams in the round of 16.
They're here for a reason. Yeah, we keep saying it. They're here for a reason.
We all agree on this.
Yeah.
It's kind of awkward.
Maybe we should invite Leander next time just to get some.
Just to tell us.
So you can tell us why Belgium is better than both by 6 goals.
Scharlakens or Don
Donker. Yeah, we should get him on.
All right. Well, I think we've spent enough time covering these matches for now, and we'll definitely be back in the future. But please be sure to, you know, read up everything. FC Yahoo is the easy way to find us. We're on every single social media you can think of, at FC Yahoo on Twitter, FC-Yahoo on Facebook. Like the podcast, follow the podcast, share the podcast, share all of our content. Alex will be writing, Joey's writing as well, and Joey's, you know, managing all the coverage.
And not sleeping.
I will occasionally be writing as well. But yeah, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time. For Joey Galino, for Alex Baker, this has been Shahan Ahmed. Thank you. All right, here, go again, Peckerman.
It's like a superhero name. Peckerman.
That's a movie I saw advertised in the Castro in SF at one point. The hero we didn't know we wanted or needed, but that we deserved.